This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator. Deandra here with Bill Goldberg. How are you?
I'm tired, man. I'm tired. It's YouTube Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so speaking of the YouTube channel, Goldberg's Garage is the new YouTube channel. If you guys want to see a nice quick peek into actual Goldberg's Garage that we've been talking about for
because
4 years.
That's what you've been hearing. And I had listened to everybody as you have been listening to me. And I want to finally tell you that, yes, the garage is finished and there is a walk around. And you guys can see what I've been bitching about for the last 4 years.
And you get a peek of the cars that are in the garage, which will eventually become individual videos. You'll be able to deep dive into those cars a little bit more. But if you want to just get an overview of how it's kind of coming together in there, and, you know, keep in mind, it's organic. Things are going to move around. Cars are going to come and go. Maybe shop's going to move around a little bit.
I'm talk about the bikes because I caught a lot of hell on YouTube. Hey, you just passed over your bikes. Well, I mean, it's a walk around.
It's a walk. It was a short video. So listen, I want to get more into the gym. I want to get more into the wash bay. I want to get more into seeing all of those components because that's what's part of Goldberg's Garage. It's not cars.
That and you know everything about the build, and so yeah. You want to see the finished product. I've been a pain in the ass bitching and moaning. I get it.
Yeah.
Now I really can give you guys what I've been. Now you can live the drama with me.
Honestly, I think at some point you need to poke your head into the barn and take a look in there, because if you're not following Wanda on Instagram, you wouldn't really know how. First of all, she did a really good job on setting that up and personalizing it. And now I saw the big cool bus cooler in there, and they're loving it. the animals are just loving it. They got the best place ever now.
What an understatement that is. I mean, literally, she opens that barn and all the alpacas and the llamas as groups go in there and lay down in front of it. It's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. But I mean, just again, shows the effectiveness of the product that they put out. And who knew that, you know, a barn was going to be a great place for it? But man, it's 105 degrees. Anywhere would be a great place for it at this point.
Yeah, no, it worked out. It worked out great. So this morning I tuned into a live stream with Ford, and they announced a Mustang Mach-E rally. Now this isn't completely new, because they teased this and talked about it at Goodwood Festival of Speed in July, but now that we know what it is. So the Mach-E, of course, is their all electric SUV. And they wanted to do, it's interesting they're calling it rally, but they wanted to give it, for lack of a better term, kind of a Ken Block spin to it. So they took the Mach-E, they raised it, I think, 22 millimeters, so just under an inch. And it's got a more aggressive, bigger kind of off-road wheel and tire package. It only comes in dual motor, and it's full-time all-wheel drive, but it does they didn't have the specs during the live stream as if it's 50-50 or 60-40 or whatever, but they're gonna release those specs on it. It's got some shielding underneath, especially around the electric motor, so you can hit the dirt. And again, the rally name sort of implies this isn't a rock climber. It's not King of the Hammers, right? This is kind of the high speed, throw it around in the dirt. Not worry about it too much if you're going on road and off road or getting out to a little campsite or something. But it also is going to come in pretty much only the most powerful configuration, the dual motor. I think they said 480 horsepower and like 600 and something, 640, 650 pound feet of torque. But they did say that currently the fastest high performance version, the Mustang Mach-E GT performance pack, which is the fastest version, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, this will be quicker than that. And they've mostly figured out how to optimize software packages, the motor tuning, because it's not really engine tuning, but optimizing the motor tuning and cooling of the motors makes it quicker. And they said expect around a 250-mile range, 0 to 60 in under 3.5 seconds with all-wheel drive off-road capability. And it actually is kind of cool. It's kind of interesting. This is sort of like going after Subaru WRX, right? And vehicles like that, but as an EV. And you had mentioned a while ago, you're like, you know, on the property, having some sort of EV truck. And I know in your head, you were thinking, you know, the Ram 1500 EV, but it is a big truck and maybe what you need to haul a bunch of shit around. But if you just are looking for like something quieter in the morning, off-road capability, you're not really rock climbing. You're just out on the ranch, right? And can haul shit in the back without it really getting wet. It's interesting. This is for you, this is an all-weather, fully enclosed off-road golf cart. That happens to be really fast.
Basically, yes. That can carry a little bit more than the golf cart, for sure.
Right. You know, like you fold down the rear seats, you got the hatch in the back, and it's, you know, it's a mid-size SUV that you would never even have to leave the property if you didn't want it to. You plug it in, you drive it around, and that's it. Like, you know, and they got some pretty cool like rally wheels and stuff for it.
Well, yeah, price point's gonna play everything, right?
You know, they're saying I think they said 65. Yeah, 65. So it's kind of on par with the GT performance pack.
I think it's a little bougie for Goldberg's Ranch.
Maybe, you know, maybe yeah,
I'm looking more ATV-ish. Big ATV is like my six by right now, but
yeah. Yeah.
You know, I got to say, there's no question I'm going to go in that direction, whether it's UTV, ATV, or whether it's,
I mean, listen, you can get a UTV, you can go head to toe camouflage and you can be Steve Austin.
No, I don't need that one. I mean, I need the utilitarian version. I don't need to be racing it around this property.
Yeah, he's got one of everything for sure. But
I need a motor. But the big thing for me, the game changer for me, is that you can't hear him, right? So when I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I don't want to wake Gage up because he's got a game later that night and he's got, you know, another hour to sleep before he goes to school, nobody's gonna hear me doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's fantastic, because every single vehicle that I have that I start up at that house early in the morning, I wake everyone up, even the neighbors up. So I mean, that's a huge issue.
The neighbors may pitch in for this thing.
I'll advertise it.
Put a little sign out front. I was like, is your sleep disturbed by my morning routine? Throw a couple bucks in the donation box and I'll pick up one of the Mach-E rallies.
That's a great fundraiser.
Yeah. At the very least, your neighbors may go, hey, can we get a deal if we all get one? We're all gonna, like, it's gonna be our 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. vehicle for every neighbor with a ranch within a 50-mile radius.
Yeah, what we need is an electric chainsaw, which they have been.
Electric chainsaw, yeah. Anyway, it seems like a neat idea. And if you look at, you know, Porsche, their off-road 911, Porsche Dakar, what Lamborghini did with their car, you know, this,
it's a great idea.
It's an interesting idea, and going, how does Ford capitalize on this fairly recent of a few years popularity of off-road vehicles, right? But also bring EV into it. And, you know, the Ford Lightning, they're like, oh yeah, it's got an off-road mode and it's got a locker in the back and, you know, it could go off-road, but it was never really sold as that, right? It wasn't really pitched as that. They said, we're giving it the capability of a standard F-150 and its off-roadness, but
you're
it's not
offering to a generation that likes those, that really concentrated on those, you know, rally vehicles either. We were prior, you know.
Right. When you go out to Goodwood and you're there for the hill climb, but then off in the distance and you hear the rally cars running around, and yeah, this kind of fits into that. So anyway, it's an interesting vehicle. I'd love to see it. They showed us briefly what it's going to look like without all the camouflage on it. And I'm sure people can really have some fun with it with some, you know, different wraps and graphics packages and stuff. So it could be kind of interesting, be kind of cool. And listen, it was smart for them to go, let's just make it fast as hell. If we're going to do a rally vehicle, let's not make it the slowest one. You know, let's make it the fastest thing we can make out of it. And who knows, maybe the software updates that make this thing quicker will make the Mach-E GT performance pack even quicker. But, you know, 3.4-ish seconds and 250 mile range. Oh, and the Mach-E GT performance pack, one of the gripes was to get the full power and to make it as quick as it is, it only allows you to do it for a certain amount of time, a certain amount of seconds, basically like a nitrous button, you know, essentially, but EV. And again, they said through updated software, the Mach-E Rally does the same thing, but now for a longer period of time. So whatever the limit was, 5 seconds, 9 seconds, whatever it was, 15 seconds. I don't remember what it was, but now it's longer. So these are the type of improvements that you expect and over the air updates, hopefully.
Well, you know what the next question is, right? The next question is, when you deploy that button, how much does it reduce your range?
So it does in the GT, the Mach-E GT, it does. And I didn't crunch the numbers on it. I don't know. That might be more of a question to people who test this, like Edmunds.com. We can ask them.
Because I think the one that it would only matter in is the one they're selling for people to race.
Right. Yeah. So they asked some people that were on the call, asked for, they submitted questions like, are you going to race it? And they said that they don't currently have a plan to race it, but they certainly are encouraging enthusiasts to race it. But that pretty much coincides with the interview with Jim Farley the other day when I said, hey, you're going to Le Mans, are you bringing a factory team? And he was like, no, there's independent teams, but you get some factory support, essentially.
Was this one built also because he wants to rally now?
I don't know. It probably wouldn't surprise me.
That's my point.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he was thinking, hey, why not? I mean, at the very least, people within Ford are going, maybe we can pitch a race rally Mach-E because the boss loves racing now and it's a little bit easier upsell. Like, that's one of his keywords that makes him happy.
Yeah, and that's
racing.
One of those things where they're like, let's come up with this idea and act like he came up with it and it'll work.
It's kind of one of those things. Now, which is also interesting because Detroit Auto Show is coming up mid-September. I'm going to be going out there. And Ford is unveiling an updated F-150. So this is sort of a mid-cycle refresh of an F-150. But now the rumor is they're also going to announce a variation on the F-150 that they call Lobo, which is wolf in Spanish. And I think they were using that name in the Mexican market. I'm not exactly sure when they were doing that, or if they currently are, because I haven't been to Mexico in a long time. But with all the success of Raptor and Raptor R and Bronco Raptor, Lobo is going to go the other direction and potentially be a new performance street truck, lowered, maybe bigger horsepower. I don't know if that means supercharged from the factory. But of course, guys who listen to this podcast know that I've got, you know, an F-150 Lightning, in 95 Lightning sport truck. So having sort of a modern day version of that. Now, I don't think, by the way, Lobo is not expected to be an EV. This isn't the new Lightning as a sport truck. It's probably going to be 5-liter V8, or it could have the Raptor engine, the 450 horsepower twin turbo V6, but now in a lowered truck, probably lighter weight than the Raptor and meant and tuned for street performance, which I wouldn't be mad about that.
I don't know anyone who would.
Well, right? I mean, I don't know, a couple people. Anyway, so some pretty cool stuff going on there. And not to try to make this all Ford focused, but completely separate from that, I just went out yesterday morning and drove the Gateway Bronco. This is the early model Gen 1 Broncos that they completely rebuild. Now, they've been at it for a few years. They've sold quite a few, something like 150 of these things already. And on the low end, they start at like $400,000. And then
a sale right now or something?
I'm sorry?
Aren't they having like a sale right now?
They should. They should have a sale. But in Monterey at the Quail, we saw them bring out the new version. And, you know, it's Coyote engine, 10 speed transmission, but full carbon fiber body, carbon fiber doors, carbon fiber dash. And I was like, why? Weight's not really the factor. And they said, the big thing is they're able to control all the little squeaks and rattles on the factory body shell, metal body shell, and eliminate so much of that. And then they stepped up to full-time all-wheel drive. There's four-wheel drive for off-roading, but there's full-time all-wheel drive. And they've developed ABS brakes. So this thing stops really well. Even the modified sort of rebuilt Broncos that we see pop up at Barrett Jackson with Coyote engines all the time, you know, you put the biggest brakes on them, you're still kind of limited with that type of vehicle and short wheelbase and how much tire you have on the ground and how much nosedive there is and kind of how it stops. And I, these guys are saying that their ABS system, significantly improves that. You know, he was kind of giving us some specs, but you know, I haven't really seen the testing results, but he's saying 60-0 in a handful of these trucks that you see is probably about 180 feet. And theirs is about 40 feet shorter, about 140 feet. So it's pretty much on par with a modern day SUV. The Coyote engine sounds great, and they have a valved exhaust. So I was hammering down, it starts to scream, but when it downshifts that transmission and opens the exhaust, the thing's a beast. So listen, super fun to drive. Now, this one, all carbon fiber body, their new chassis, the revised suspension, $800,000 is what you're looking at.
I mean, we laugh, and more power to them, because they're obviously not building shit like that for that amount of money if people aren't buying, right? So more power to these guys. I think it's fucking ridiculous, but I mean, for $800,000, you could buy, I mean, my God, what could you buy? But at the end of the day, as I always say, you do whatever you want with your money, you work your ass off. Right. So if you want to, if you can get 800 for it, I mean, get 800 for it.
They've sold over 100 of their $500,000 Broncos. Since they announced this at the Quail a week ago, the $800,000 one, they've got 12 orders on it. And a handful of of guys that ordered the previous version are ordering the new one. I think kind of famously on social media is Post Malone has one of their trucks already. And he already called him and said, I want this one, you know, and now he had some requests on with audio system and whatever that he wanted to do, which is, you know, for $800,000, make some requests, you know, go ahead and make some requests for that kind of money. But listen, it was fun to drive. I can't say for sure what an $800,000, you know, Bronco is supposed to feel like. This was a fun vehicle to drive. But this one with this high dollar amount is, you know, the custom paint, the carbon fiber body, the denim interior, like all the hand done stuff. So there's probably a version of this thing where you can get the boat, you get the most of its technology, the ABS brakes, all wheel drive, the Coyote engine and whatever, and maybe get it in a little bit more affordable price package if you don't opt for the over the top graphics and interior and whatever. So it really kind
of
depends.
I'd like to see one sitting right next to a Ring Brothers.
Yeah. You know, and so, but something like Ring Brothers is different because,
well,
you know,
completely different, but
yeah, you know, the Hot Rod Builders, you're paying for a one-off vehicle that they're not going to do again. And you're sitting down with them and customizing it the way you want and having a conversation with them about how they're going to, you know, and it's all hand built. And, but yeah, honestly, like if you went to Ring Brothers and said, I want a Bronco and here's $800,000.
Wow.
Right. Like, I don't know what you're going to end up with, but it's going to be nuts. It's going to be nuts. Listen,
completely nuts. And to me, I don't know a lot about Gateway, but I would much rather have a Ring Brothers $800,000 version than just because of the uniqueness and because, yes, of Ring Brothers.
Right. You know, honestly, though, I think the difference would be with Gateway, you're probably going to get a nicer riding vehicle because they've got 150 of these under their belt and they've revised the chassis and the suspension and the steering and everything over time. So they've got the experience on making it right. Now, do you get a Ring Brothers car? No. Do you get a Troy Trepanier car or Bobby Alloway or a Chip Foose car? You don't. But it's interesting how this business model, like the Icons and the Singers of the world, now we've got Velocity and we've got Gateway and you know, we've got a lot of companies that are popping up and doing a good job. Like, that, you know,
they're not just disappearing like years past.
No, and these companies are cranking out, you know, in some cases 40, 50, 100 vehicles a year. Like, all of a sudden.
And right when you hear about them, you're like, oh no, that shit ain't gonna last. And then boom, just like you said, they got to order a 40 car.
Yeah, listen, I mean, Chip Foose, I love Chip. We're friends with Chip. You go down to his place; he's got a great facility. Guys are in there working, customizing. It's all just amazing artwork. The guys at Gateway Bronco have like a 60,000 square foot like manufacturing facility. It's like an assembly line. You know, look how Jonathan Ward, an icon, has grown. You know, he still does a lot of very custom vehicles, but his sort of assembly line of Broncos and his Thriftmaster trucks and stuff is an incredible business model. So I appreciate you, these guys letting me drive it. Everyone was super nice. They build a really fun vehicle to drive. And of all of these, like, you know, modified Broncos that have popped up, from the one-off ones you see at Barrett Jackson that people kind of just build for that, to Icon and Gateway and the other guys that are out there, I haven't driven any of them. And jumping into, you know, arguably one of the best ones out there, if not the best, was an honor to do and super fun. And they did a great job. So
unless they can compare to that $800,000 when you just drove, I wouldn't be jumping at another.
Yeah, I'm gonna avoid it for a little while. Yeah, that's gonna be the response. If someone may go, hey, do you want to come out and drive my Bronco? Sure, but I drove the Gateway Bronco.
Exactly. You don't want me to drive it?
Just wanna let you guys know. I drove the Gateway Bronco, and it was super fun. So, yeah. So I saw you got the Z28, not Wanda Z28. You got the Z28 race car up on the rack. Getting that prepared for another video.
Yeah, first video out is going to be the Demon 170, and then shortly thereafter, week after week, we're going to have one car. You know, we're going to take off the lift. We're going to talk about it. We're going to take it out and drive it. So we got to make sure everything is up to speed, man. So I got new tires on.
Yeah, you know that you got to drive it or at least fire it up. You know what kind of hell you'll be unleashing?
Oh, yes. I know what kind of hell. YouTube is an entirely different place. And, you know, yeah, I've already felt the wrath of the audience, but well-deserved. That's fine. But,
yeah.
Obviously,
it's good. Y'all have fun with it.
One thing that I add to the experience is that I just go off the cuff, man. We're not, everything that comes out of my mouth is not by any stretch of the imagination predetermined, as you can tell on this show. So if I screw up, then I screw up. And sometimes the editor wants to leave it in because it's humorous, and sometimes not. At the end of the day, I feel the wrath of it. And you guys, please do me a favor. Continue to let me know when I screw up, because, you know, it's humbling. Thank you.
Yeah. But it's all meant to be fun. It's all in good fun. And I
do not have three testicles.
Despite what you claim in a video.
Despite what I said numerous times. So, I mean, use that as an example.
Yeah. 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 All right. So
we're having fun.
What we're going to do next was I pulled the audio of our interview with Jim Farley from Monterey Car Week. Listen, we're on site. We're at Laguna Seca. You're going to hear cars in the background and, microphones kind of waving around. So bear with us on the audio quality, maybe just focus on the interview, and hopefully
they stuck with us for 3 years with me getting this.
Yeah, this is not the worst thing you guys have heard. So, so hopefully you guys enjoy the interview with Farley, and then we'll wrap it up. And I'm hoping next week we'll bring the Gordon Murray interview, which again, a little bit of caveat on audio quality. He's kind of a quiet spoken gentleman, and somewhere a T50 gets fired up in the background. It's not as bad as I thought, but hey, it's kind of a nice little buzz going on back there, and it's a great interview. So I'm happy to say we've got that as well.
Tell someone to turn that T50 off.
Yeah. let's do this. Let's throw to the interview with Jim Farley. Yeah, we're sitting here with Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford at Laguna Seca, the racetrack. You're going to be doing some racing this weekend. Yeah. I think we saw your Cobra out at the Quail.
Yeah, drove it over the hill from here with my son, a few burnouts. It was great. Yeah, it was fun.
One of the few Cobras with the roof on it, which you see at Goodwood.
Yes.
You see on the track at Goodwood. You do not see out on the West Coast that often. And I think we've talked about it before. And I don't know, it's a little more aero
for the bigger track. Also hides a full roll cage, which I like to race with.
Yeah, no, smart. So, yeah. But how important is it to you, and don't be modest here, to go, I work for a car company. The performance is what I'm about. And I go out and sort of live it. Like, yes. I'm the real deal.
Yes. Well, I think each leader and business have different profile, but I'm a very simple person. I've only cared about cars my whole life. And like the GTD that came out, you know, I saw the 911 RS in 73. That car was very influential to me personally.
I love that car as
well. Yeah, yep. Isn't it amazing? And so there was never been an American, but with the latest technology, there's never really been an American kind of car like that. So I guess my whole life is cars, like yours. I go to racetrack because I like being around car people and the racetrack. Stuff breaks, they help you out. I love working on advanced EVs, but I have to tell you, when I get in the room for the next generation Mustang or GTD or a Raptor R or a Bronco, you know, I love that. It's like, and because being a CEO is there are a lot, most of the decisions you see are things that people did not want to make. It came to you for a reason. And so that helps me personally, motivates me through the more, you know, challenging things. We had to get out of India. We had to get out of South America manufacturing. These were tens of thousands of people's lives. And, you know, I hate those decisions, but I have to make them pure and reasoned. And so when I get to come here and race and put that visor down, I don't think about anything else. And when I go in the design studio and see a Bronco Raptor, you know, or talk to people like us, car people who really love lifestyle around cars, it pumps me up. It's just part of the formula. I think there are probably other CEOs that get pumped up, I don't know, with golf or other things, art or gardening, but for me it's...
You don't hang out with those guys?
Not really.
Not really.
I don't have time because I'm here with you guys. Yeah, so I guess I'm a one-trick pony that way.
The Mustang GTD.
The GTD. So we saw that. We were at the yep. presentation for that. Yep. And a car like that, you kind of wonder, how does it come to be, mm-hmm. right? Was it planned or was it just sort of, yeah, I want to like, when did the light bulb go on that car?
The inside story is when I joined Ford in 07, 08, we were fighting for our lives. The other two companies domiciled here, they went BK, we didn't. And I knew that 50 years was coming up in 2015 for our outright win in Le Mans. And I started talking to people, the head of engineering, hey, we need to go back to Le Mans in the GT class. I don't want to race prototypes. That's like, you know, $600 million. We don't have that. And at the same time, we had decided to go to homologate Mustang globally, which was a really big decision. We did not have a right-hand drive Mustang. We did not have it homologated for the EU. And so when we did that on sixth-generation Mustang, subsequently, Mustang is now the highest selling sports coupe in the world, which most people don't know. They think it's 911 or some other car. No, it's Mustang. We sell a lot in Sweden and Australia. Our biggest Mustang deal in the world is in Sweden.
Really?
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible.
Crazy.
And so when we made that decision, the idea was let's go back to Le Mans with the Mustang. But then we did the simulation. The rules were really written for like a Ferrari 458 at the time, and the silhouette was just not going to be competitive. So we would have to have all these waivers. You see these street cars that people race in GT class with all these weird aerodynamic devices.
Right.
They don't look anything like the car that you can buy. Well, that's what our car would look like, our Mustang. And we thought it'd be too dependent on the French ACO, and they would probably never let us win. So we built a GT. But in our head, we always had this idea of doing a Mustang to win Le Mans. When we redesigned the seventh generation, we designed the car, and the rules had changed for Le Mans that we could go back and win in the GT class with Ferrari and Porsche and everyone else. So, and Aston Martin. So then I came up, I loved watching Mazda and Porsche and how they ran their racing business. And if you take like what Mazda did on the low end with, you know, kind of grassroots racing and same make race series, and then all the way up to Porsche, we wanted to do the same thing with Mustang. And because it was a V8, we could go to Aussie Supercars, we could go to NASCAR, we could go to NHRA electric racing and funny car racing, and then we could do all the road racing. So we allocated the capital and the talent to do a GT4, a Dark Horse R, a Dark Horse same make race series like Mazda, spec Mazda, but with a Mustang, affordable Mustang, track cars at the low end, and then a GT4 and GT3 for both WEC and IMSA. And we don't think that there's another brand that has that kind of width. Basically, on any weekend, we're racing in, you know, 20 countries around the world with Mustang. And so when we did the GT3, I looked at the car and I was like, why don't we make a road car? But not like the GT, like let's put stuff on it that is outlawed on racing, like drag reduction system. And that's what we decided to do. It wasn't super democratic, but I thought it was just the right thing to do. And when I saw the 911 RS all those years back, and then I saw Porsche build, you know, in the 90s when no one was watching in Europe, you know, we had the RS America in here, lightweight, you know, 911. It was kind of a marginalized product. And they had all these great GT2 and GT3s in Europe that weren't sold here. I watched them build that whole business. I watched Aston Martin build a whole business around racing and around road cars connected to the racing. And I thought, well, why shouldn't American do it? So it's not like a Shelby or Z06. It's a different kind of concept. It's basically a race car, a GT race car, and we put stuff that we can on the road that we can't race on the track. And I wanted to compete with the Astons and the AMG Blacks and as an American company and sell it around the world, not just in America.
Yeah. So what I heard was is you saw the race car and you said that'd be cool on the street. let's go with that. It's like it's the coolest version of it, right?
It's funny that you keep bringing up that Porsche 73 RS because that car spoke to me in the RS and the S as well. Yes. Like I was just like, I don't know why I'm so smitten with that car. 210 horsepower on the S, you know, little lighter weight. Like I love the idea that somebody massaged something, took a little weight out, added a little horsepower, and I was always obsessed with that car, sort of weirdly, but I don't really talk about it that much, but it was, I always think it's like the coolest little car and inspiring, especially with the ducktail and everything, everything else. But it's just interesting that you kind of zoned in on that car, and I was always kind of zoned in on
me
that
too,
car as well.
Car people.
Or the S. I know, but there's a lot of car people. I like Mopar,
I'm
and
like,
I'm like, shut up. Yeah.
Understand the diversity.
There's
of it
a finesse to it. It's kind
really
of
hard. That's why I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's why this is not just a technology Tour de Force. That's why we insisted on Harry and Joey, who are developing our race car, to do all the development work, because I want that those pieces to add up more than just the pieces, like you said about the RS.
Yeah, like a little bit of that finesse, and now brought into Mustang in this particular case, which is
I agree. There's sort of brute horsepower, you know, muscle kind of thing, and then there's a kind of finesse thing. And the finesse thing is interesting because the finesse thing is almost like an engineering challenge where you go, you get a box of spaghetti and you have to build a structure that'll hold a bowling ball, you know. Yeah. But no one says you get an I-beam and then it'll hold a bowling ball, because you're like, well, any I-beam will hold it. But the finesse part is kind of the interesting part, you know. And in racing, you know, you see the hinges for the hood drilled out, you know, because someone's trying to buy 3 ounces. You know what I mean?
Or Porsche doing the emblem as a sticker instead of a little stamped piece of tin, right?
Or the battery being on the right side in the rear instead of the driver's side, because we're going to get a pound and a half over that side, you know what I mean? And I do feel like for the real crazy car guys, we love the finesse part. It's all the little crazy details. I got a BRE Roadster, Pete Brock.
Oh, right. Okay.
And there's a switch on the dash. And it's an alternator switch, which will shut the alternator off. The magnetic field on the alternator off, but don't do it with more than 3 laps to go. Only do it with under 2 laps. If you flip this switch, it'll cut the alternator, which will cut the electronic magnetic beam, and buy yourself 1/10 of a horsepower. And hopefully you'll make it to the finish line. But the idea that he put a switch to shut the alternator off for the last 2 laps of the race, that's the finesse part.
It's not exactly a nitrous button. I mean, adding the switch probably was more weight than what it's worth to disconnect that thing.
I've seen in Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
The alternator. I got blurry.
Yeah, that is funny. I like that.
So heading out to Le Mans, bringing some Mustangs out there, the Mustang versions of the race car, two teams.
We learned a lot from GT. We don't want to have, I don't even think you can have a factory team anymore. What I really loved about Porsche's model is that they're in the business of race cars. They have sold, I think, 5,000 911 race cars now.
Wow.
And they have a huge parts business. And they design the car so all the parts are interchangeable. I really like that model. And I don't think why an American company can't do the same thing.
not just the way they did it, but the same idea. So we're going to go to Le Mans with customer cars. And the whole orientation is to serve those customers.
Okay.
And so we have a, we've been overwhelmed by the number of customer requests, frankly. But we can only build so many race cars at Multimatic. So I think, you know, it's like a couple teams maybe at the first year.
And you're going to race Le Mans. Forget the PR people that are surrounding us right now, everybody.
I worked really hard over the winter. No one really noticed, but since you asked, I got my IMSA bronze rating over the winter. I'm pretty sure I'm maybe the only one CEO that's done that. But I worked really hard. It took me a lot to apply for it. I didn't realize how serious IMSA is on their license, their licensing classification. And I've done two GT4 IMSA races now, so we'll see. I mean, I just passed my racing budget. I agree with my wife, and so I can't race anymore until next March, until, you know, until I get it approved again. So it all come down to budget. But I would love to do it. I found a couple of older gentlemen that are really good drivers, like Eric Vanderpool. He's won Le Mans several times. He and I raced my GT40 in Europe together. And so we'd love to do it as the over 60 guys. But it all come down to money and time and everything else, like everyone in racing.
Yeah, whole bucket list.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit, I have a Ford Lightning. I have a new Ford Lightning and a 95 Lightning. Okay. But you road tripped out here. Yes. In the Ford Lightning. Yes. How is that experience now that you've got probably more time in the vehicle than you've ever had? Yeah.
I did that because we're tripling the production in Dearborn of Lightning. We thought we'd sell about 20,000. We increased the capacity to 50 without a lot of cost and time. But to go to 150, we've had to build a whole new building. So it's a huge capital investment, and we hired all these people in Michigan to build it. So I wanted to go out on the road to kind of figure out, hey, what do we have to do here to make this a mainstream product? And I learned a lot about charging. I guess I would say I don't. Anyone who says that range anxiety is a thing, no, it's charging anxiety. Yeah, and yeah, and I learned a lot about what's great about the vehicle, and what I talked to maybe 50 salespeople. I've talked to pro customers because we sell a professional version of Lightning. I learned a lot from them. Just to go out and see with your eyes, I think as leaders, that's just who I am. I like going out, and before we make a big decision, I have to go and see with my eyes and learn. It helps me be sharper.
Yeah, so one of the things we've talked about, and sorry, we got a whole bunch of 935s behind us. This is the best view ever.
It's a class I'd be in.
It would be, yeah.
It would be. Yeah. That, by the way, that guy just jumped the green flag. He just jumped. He just came around the corner and took off.
The red one, yeah.
It just took off. Yeah, you're supposed to grade up. Come on.
Damn Porsche, guys. I swear.
I will say, and you probably know this, Jim, you can make up some ground if you can figure out what gear to be in. Yes. And like what. Yes. RPM to be in. Yes. And you can jump that start. Like. Yes. If you're in the right rev, in the right gear, and you sort of work it out in your head a little bit before you come around that corner, you can jump three cars at the start of every one of these things if you're just kind of in that right RPM range.
That's a Bruce Canepa move.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, I just saw Bruce, by the way, he's in eighth place or something, but he's going to start making up some ground.
That makes sense.
I'm guessing.
Go from the back.
Or the middle.
But he'll go from the back. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You'll see him coming, but I don't, well, anyway. All right. Yeah, the truck's beautiful, by the way. I drive around with Matt.
Yeah.
in the Lightning all the time. But it is the network of charging centers. Yes. So you drove out from where?
We started in San Francisco area. We went down to Bakersfield the first day. All kind of two lane roads. Then we went from Bakersfield to Mojave. We went to see the Boneyard at the Mojave Airport. And then drove down to LA. I had a delivery of a Raptor R with The Rock. And I did Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert. And then we went up to Barstow, because I wanted to take my son to Route 66.
Yeah.
And just a little section of Route 66. And then we went to Vegas, finished the Vegas, like 1,100 miles with all the different detours. And it was great. I mean, I pretty much figured out that this transition for mainstream customers, it was interesting. I'd go to these charging stations and there'd be like the Charge America and then there'd be the Tesla. The Tesla people are now all sitting inside their vehicles. They don't talk to anyone. They don't even talk to each other. Like 2 years ago, I bet you they were, but they now know to charge, they know how to do it, and they like prefer just to be by themselves. And then they're all of us. We're all this clumpy people over here at in America, and there's Hyundai's and us and Polestar, and we're all like, so, where's the next station? How far are you going? Are you going to do the 350? You know, my son is questioning everything I'm doing. Dad, we got to wait in line for the 350. You know, why are we waiting for the slow charger? There's no line, but that's ridiculous. And so it was, I learned a lot.
It's learning to live with an EV is the big behavioral shift.
Yeah.
Now I've been driving my F-150 for a while. People ask, what's it like? And I'm like, well, an F-150 Platinum is the nicest pickup truck you can buy. Mine's just fast and quiet.
Yeah.
That's basically the difference.
Yeah, it's better for certain duty cycle. If you don't tow, but if you want a pickup truck for the flexibility, I mean, the Lightning is amazing. But now we're entering where mainstream customers are buying it, not, you know, the real advanced people. And they have a lot of questions. They don't know. They expect the salespeople to help them answer questions on charging. How does BlueCruise work? You know, what real range am I going to get? What if I tow once in a while with a boat? You know, what is it going to do? And that is a human problem we're facing now. And we're seeing it in pricing. The pricing for these EVs is going down massively, and it's way below the bill of material incremental cost. And that's all because it's a different group buying it now. And I'm really glad I did that because I understand now maybe we should have brand ambassadors at the charging stations. I'm sure glad we did the deal with Tesla where our customers in January can use the Tesla supercharger network because there's a lot of them open. And with an adapter on the phone, we're going to send you an adapter in January, hopefully, and you can use all the Tesla supercharger network at no cost.
I mean, when EVs were coming out, the question was range. How far, how far, how far? Now the question is, where do I charge? And then how do I know the charger's going to work? And then the plug's not broken. And,
you can't reserve it. It's really frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you can't reserve it and you can't verify it's not broken is really frustrating.
It is. You go into a parking mall and you're like, all of these chargers, and you're like, and then you go, oh, there's a spot, and then somebody ran over the plug and it's smashed. And
I will say it's commendable. Oh no, not commendable, sorry. It's practical that you are going out and seeing things, you know what I mean? Because you think about, you know, there's a hurricane or there's a fire in Maui, and then the president's gonna show up and he's gonna go, oh man, there's a fire. Yeah. Everything's Mick Fleetwood's bars burned to the ground, you know, and then they're going to go, we should fix this. And then they leave, you know, and
yeah.
I always kind of think, what are they doing? Like, what are they really doing? Like,
people
how much
really
do they
think?
See it? But I mean, the idea.
They don't have tools on Air Force One. They can just unload, just like bring out hammer and nails.
You're at the track. You're racing your Cobra, you know, Ford powered, of course. And you're traveling around in your electric truck and checking out. Like, you really have to kind of, like, do it. You know what I mean? Like, I was just driving out to Vegas the other day, and, like, you stop at Barstow, and you're like, are we going to look at the charging station by the Starbucks? Are they out of order? Is there three people?
Right.
Like, it's not really something that works with a memo or somebody texting you. Like, there is still a part that is sort of much like this interview where you have to sort of get in the same room and you have to actually look at people and you have to kind of ask them questions. And I just think that's the way to run a company. And I think it's, I said
it's
commendable, but it's
harder.
Actually practical.
It is practical. It's totally
to
practical.
It's the most
it's not,
practical.
It's, really. It's, yeah, I totally agree. That's a great word for it. And I also believe that we won't be able to make it through this transition if our leaders don't lead differently.
Right.
We can't just smoke cigars, sit in the design dome and say, I think they're going to like that.
Right.
It's not how it's going to work. It's not how it's working. There are a lot of surprises. Like the EVs are really having a huge disproportionate negative impact on the luxury brands. Because in the past, when I worked at Lexus, we take a Highlander, we put a RX body on it, we put a third of a liter displacement, we put better materials inside, maybe improve the, you know, technology in the vehicle, maybe give it ABS if the Highlander didn't have it, whatever. And then we charge 10 grand and the bill of material incremental was 5 grand. So we make 5 grand. But when you go to an EV, it's so quiet and so powerful that a luxury brand can't compete. There's no premium for the powertrain and the quietness. So they lose that pricing power. And normally EVs come with more tech anyways. So now they're like, well, wait a minute, they're not able to charge any premium for the brand, for the logo. And it's really fascinating. Like that, if I was at BMW or Mercedes, like they are talking about that. But to understand that, you got to go talk to people, I believe.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you said. It's practical.
On that note, I think we'll wrap it up and we'll let you go. But I really appreciate it. Appreciate your time and good luck racing this weekend.
I totally got no sleep. It doesn't matter if it's an inconsequential race or not. It's just like, because people be like, oh, he had a crash, or oh, he hit someone else. Like, so I can never be that guy.
Yeah.
So racing for me is, I don't know. I have to do it right. Right? I can't do it the wrong way. I'm representing the company, and I don't want to be an idiot.
Yeah, but we've seen you out here on the track many times, and there's no doubt you're fast. Yeah. You can drive. You're smoked.
Qualified. I qualified second, and I finished first in the qualifying race. So I'll start first.
Oh, start first.
Okay, yeah,
good.
Yeah.
All right, that's right.
We'll see how it goes, but, you know, I don't know. I always get super nervous.
Good.
Do you?
Do you get nervous? Yeah, because you think, you know, the thing about racing is there's a lot of what ifs.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
and
correct.
Most aspects correct. Of life is sort of, I could have a good day at the office or a bad day at the office or a good day with my wife or a bad day with my wife or a good day with my kids or a bad day with my kids. But the bad day isn't your kids killing you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a bad day. Yeah. It's like an argument or something, unless you're the Menendez family. But what I'm saying is the what ifs in racing span from I'm going to be on a podium being sprayed with champagne to I will be removed in a helicopter.
Yes.
With a priest on the helicopter.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's a big range. Yeah. And when you go to bed that night, that range is in your head, which doesn't exist in any other facet of life.
Yes.
And that's the part that's, but that's what's attractive about it, right? The helicopter.
I don't know about you, but I always feel so relieved. In a good way, like I'm 20 times happier after I finish. Not because, just because it all kind of worked out the way it was going to. And you're like, oh, it all got resolved, and maybe I had an average day at the track, but I still feel really relaxed and happy because I put myself out there. I don't have to do this. I'd still be a great car person without it, but it's part of who I am.
You're happy at zero.
Yes.
Which is, I just came back.
Yes.
The car's in one piece.
Yes.
I'm covered with sweat.
Yes.
I didn't hurt anybody.
Yes.
I didn't make an ass of myself.
Yes.
I spent $2,000 in fuel this weekend. But here we are. Like, you've never been
literally did every one of my
zero.
Check marks. That's exactly the check marks I'm looking for. Yeah. At the end. Yep, perfect way to end it.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. All right, guys. Thanks so much. We're going to wrap up this show. Anything else? Anything we're missing?
This morning, the final TRX was announced by Dodge. They'll be produced by the end of this year. It's a new package. I didn't see anything about a horsepower upgrade, which is the reason why I was going to trade mine in for one of the last versions.
Yeah.
Mr. Trussell, expect a phone call from me because I need to find out. I hear there's only 4,000 versions being built. It's a special package, but as I said, performance-wise, I don't know anything about it. So other than that, no, I don't know anything about the.
All right. Well, hopefully we get some more updates on that soon. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Of course, drinkbravago.com. I appreciate you guys getting orders in. And now that you've listened to the podcast, you're ready for a drink. So put another order in. And we appreciate the support for that. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
Your hand on a Bravado.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.